This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And good afternoon. You're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, filling in for Tony this afternoon, March 3rd, 2017. We've got a great program for you this afternoon. We're going to focus on education to a great degree this afternoon. You all know that one of the things that President Trump called for in his recent speech to Congress was what he called the civil rights issue of our day, education. You also know that President Trump has appointed Betsy DeVos to be the on his cabinet as the Secretary of Education. And you know that Betsy DeVos is a proponent of school choice. So we're going to talk about school choice. We're going to talk about education. We're going to talk about what good education is and bad education is. We're going to talk about ideas, the consequences of ideas. I'm a college president. I'm passionate about this subject because I believe you must be too. Ideas always have consequences. Good ideas bear good fruit in culture and in community and in your church and in your kids. And bad ideas, bad education, if you will bear the opposite. Bad culture, bad community, bad government, bad church, if you will, and even bad behavior in your kids. We have to recognize that the ideological food that we feed our culture is going to bear consequences. And if we feed our culture, if you will, to use that analogy, ideological carcinogens, we're going to have cancer of the heart, mind, and soul. And you can't cure cancer with Band-Aids. You have to go back to the cause of the disease. And the disease that we're suffering in our culture today, to great measure, is the disease of lousy ideas. I would argue, as a Christian college president, that we've been feeding our generation, this generation, the past generation, several generations of American citizens, terrible ideas, and we're reaping the consequences of that when you turn on the nightly news and you see a protest at Berkeley or University of New York or Brown or Emory or Yale or the University of Missouri, and you see these protests, this terrible behavior, this juvenile behavior, this temper tantrum being thrown in the streets and on the campuses across our land. The reason for that is bad education. So with that as context, we know that President Trump visited a private religious school today in Orlando. And he did so shining a spotlight on his school choice initiatives with Betsy DeVos. The point is to raise the educational standards in the United States. And with us now on this segment for Washington Watch is Dr. Carol Swain. Dr. Swain is a conservative African-American professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University, and she's an author. She's going to help us analyze what's at stake right now, and we will also discuss the fact that President Trump visited a black university, a black college campus this week, and he was blasted for doing so, and the president of that university, excuse me, he didn't attend that university, he invited some educators, some African-American educators to his office, to the White House, so that he could talk to them about education and get their input and listen to their ideas. And because one of those presidents, president of a black university, decided to attend, that president was branded as an overseer of the Trump plantation, quote unquote. Dr. Swain, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on, and thank you for what you've done to heighten awareness about university.
Well, I'm delighted that you're on, and I want to be very brief in setting you up for your comments because I want to let you talk and educate us because that's the point of today's particular program. But let me just give these couple bullets, and I'll ask you to respond and add to them. The White House calls for a trip to St. Andrew's School in Florida, Orlando, listening. They called it a listening session on school choice. Florida has a tax credit program, a scholarship program that is similar to vouchers. Trump's new education secretary, Betsy DeVos, is a big school choice advocate. Next bullet. According to the nation's report card, only 37% of the 12th graders are proficient in reading, as recorded in 2015, and just 25% were proficient in math. And it even gets worse for black students. Black students' achievement levels are a disgrace, quite frankly. Nationally, 17% of black students scored proficient in reading, and only 7% scored proficient in math. And in some cities such as Detroit, black academic proficiency is even worse. An example here is eighth graders. Only 4% were proficient in math in Detroit and 7% in reading. And educators in the NEA and whatnot seem to celebrate these achievements within public education as if this is good news. President Trump welcomes officials from historically black colleges to the universities to the Oval Office, and Howard University President Wayne Frederick was part of Monday's meeting. And as I just described, he was excoriated afterward on his campus as being a quote-unquote overseer of the Trump plantation. So with those bullets in play, let me ask you a couple questions. What is so controversial that parents have the choice to decide which school is best for their children? Help us understand why that's even controversial.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't be controversial, but we know that for some time now, the National Education Association has pretty much pushed policies and strategies to empower themselves, and the focus has not been on what's best for children. It's about their political agenda, and a lot of that political agenda is about brainwashing children to think a particular kind of way and not about educating them about basic things that you would expect an educated person to learn.
Now, as a scholar,
history, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, algebra, that's less of a focus than the political agenda.
You mentioned brainwashing. As an African American scholar, somebody who is very thoughtful in your own right and accomplished, a faculty member at Vanderbilt, one of the premier institutions on our land, does it offend you that somebody would suggest that you must think a given ideological way, and if you don't, you're not part of the club?
I mean, I've been a professor now for, about 27 years, and it's been that way for a long time. And for African Americans or blacks, if you're not, you know, part of the Democratic circle and you're not parroting the same message as the liberal left leaders, then you're out of the club. In fact, there would be some that would argue that you're not black.
Now, I've been told over and over again, and I've read it and repeatedly in various different journals and whatnot, that the African American community, by a strong majority, prefers school choice. Do you agree with that?
I mean, there's data to show that. The surveys, the majority of blacks and I believe Hispanics as well prefer school choice and vouchers. It's the leaders of the Democratic Party who are beholden to money from the teachers' associations. They're the ones that have worked against it. And we know that when President Obama took office, that there was a very successful program in Washington, D.C. that had vouchers and school choice, and it was shut down. And so it's pretty clear that it's not about the children. It's about what will advance a particular ideological agenda. And when it comes to the politicians, where they stand depends a lot on who's donating money to their coffers.
Now, I assume that the average citizen that's attending the community church and even the pastor of the local black community church would be in favor of what you're saying right now and would want school choice, recognizing that that is a better option than many of the failed institutions
in
their local neighborhood that are run by the government.
I just had a conversation with a prominent black law professor, and we were discussing the black church. And the black church, you know, in America has lost its way. There's so much of a focus on money at many of the churches. It's money, it's the Democratic political agenda. You're not going to get a lot about the gospel, self-reliance, and Jesus. You're going to get the Democratic Party talking points at a lot of churches. And that's the sad reality, and it also helps explain why the black community suffers with so much dysfunction. They're not getting what they need to be the kind of citizens they once were. Our ancestors, we're not getting what we once got from the church.
So if the black leadership in Congress and in government and whatnot, and the local pastor is drinking the Kool-Aid, if you will, what's the solution? How do we listen to the people who want better education for their children, but they're not getting it because leadership is standing in their way? What do we do?
I mean, there has to be new leadership. And, you know, I applaud President Trump and candidate Trump for going into the black community, speaking at the black churches that would have him come in. And surely the ones that would have him come in were churches that would be more amenable to that message. But for the most part, I think that you have to go directly to the people. They realize that their lives are not being changed in a positive manner by the policies of the Democratic Party. I think this is an optimal time to sort of reset the button and restructure things in the black community, because people can see what's wrong. They're not sure about the solution. I think the worst thing President Trump could do is to take his advice, though, from Democrats. And I know that some of the people that that he may even be associated with, they were Democrats up until he ran for office. There are no new ideas that are effective that will come from the Democratic Party or Democratic leaders. They cannot think outside the box, and everything they've advanced has failed.
You know, you have to wonder if Frederick Douglass or Booker T. Washington would even be welcome within the broader, more popular African-American conversation, political conversation today. You wonder if they would be ostracized and called overseers of the Trump plantation.
In colleges and universities. I remember I taught at Princeton for 10 years. I was tenured there. And I went back a few years ago, and a student wanted to meet with me. She was an Afro-American studies major. She'd never heard of Booker T. Washington. And so
are you serious?
She knew all about W.E.B. Du Bois, but she'd never heard of Booker T. Washington.
Do you have any advice for us as to black leaders we should be following that do have a strong voice for a biblical worldview and the consistency of a constitutional free republic?
I mean, there's a whole...
Such as yourself, or...
There's a whole group of black Republicans, and if I start naming people, I would not do anyone justice, but there are conservatives in the black community, and there are a lot of people that are Democrats. They just have not made that transition. And I was a Democrat up until 2009, even though I had been appointed to positions as an independent by President Bush. I think that it's hard to make the transition, and we almost have to hold people's hands, but it's time for more blacks to come out of the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is not perfect, but at least it has faith, family, values. Republicans, the ones that I know, they love the Constitution. There are some Republicans, though, that act like Democrats, and I think we should help them transition. But for the most part, I think that the people are ready for change, and we should help them transition, and we should encourage the president not to take his policy positions from Democrats.
Dr. Swain, thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon on Washington Watch. Blessings to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Coming up next, a new study finds that a staggering 88% of the coverage of the Trump administration by this mainstream media is negative. Stay tuned, and we'll return right after this commercial break.
When governments authorize abortion, do abortions in that country decrease? Many argue that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as if rarity depends upon safety and legality. We now have nearly a century of evidence documenting what happens when governments authorize abortion. It does not become rare, but increases exponentially. Indeed, in less than 100 years, abortion has become the greatest Holocaust ever, far surpassing all wars and genocide combined. The Abortion Worldwide Report is the first to systematically track reported abortions in 100 nations, territories, and regions from the year of authorization through 2015. The principal authors of the Abortion Worldwide Report are William Robert Johnston and Thomas Jacobson, who compiled the data and information in the report over the last 32 and 14 years, respectively. Their research has revealed that over 1 billion babies have been aborted in 100 nations since 1920. Visit frc.org/university to view this policy discussion.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The First Lady of the United States praying a Christian prayer in public? Seriously? Sadly, your local township supervisor might be hesitant to pray at the local town hall. Yet here was Melania Trump praying the Lord's Prayer before a watching world. What have we come to as a people that we have such skepticism? For I know many of you had such feelings as myself. Who rules the United States anyway? Satan or God? We want God to bless America, and yet we don't know how to respond when the First Lady prays the Lord's Prayer. We want to cry out to God, "Hallelujah, Jesus yet lives in America. Please, Lord, bring revival and restoration to our embattled America. Help us to be discerning and keep us from skepticism when it's unwarranted. Renew a right spirit within us." This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Friday afternoon, it's 22 after the hour, and I'm Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. Again, Everett Piper, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. I do want your calls in the as we go into the final 15 minutes of the program this afternoon. So remember that the number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Coming up next, our guest is going to be Media Research Council's, Rich Noyes. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Rich. Welcome to Washington Watch.
You pronounce it perfectly. Thanks for having me.
Okay, forgive me for that. It's spelled N-O-Y-E-E-S, so I assumed I was pronouncing it correctly. You're the director of research for Media Research Council, one of the nation's foremost experts on news, media, and politics. And you've been involved with this organization for some time. What I want to talk to about right now is that you have discovered, and we'll let you share the data after we play an audio clip here, that 88% of the broadcasts on the mainstream media are hostile toward the president in his first 30 days of office. Let's cue it up with this audio clip.
I don't think he's been treated fairly in the media. I really don't. I have to say that. I thought that one of the biggest casualties of this past election was the credibility of the media. You know, I read probably six or seven newspapers a day. My staff sends me the clips. And you know, there was just a steady drumbeat of attack against Donald Trump.
Okay, this is Congressman Stephen Lynch. Now, for those who don't know, he's a Democrat from Massachusetts, their 8th district. So we have a Massachusetts Democrat admitting that the media is being unfair to the president. I could go in and share the data and steal your thunder, but I'm not going to do that. Rich, help us through this. What in the world is going on, and what should we as consumers of this information do about it?
Well, I think the big picture is that the media think that Donald Trump's election was the result of them not being harsh enough during the 2016 campaign, and so they have doubled the amount of coverage they're giving him compared to that, and they are unrelentingly negative. We looked at just the first 30 days of the Trump presidency, January 20th through February 18th, just the ABC, CBS, NBC evening newscast. Which is sort of, you know, I think that's that if it's there, it's getting wide distribution in the media. And it was just a phenomenal amount of coverage, 16 hours about the administration. That is more than half of all of the news, weather, crime, everything else, human interest. No, Trump was by far the big story. And the tone was extremely hostile, 88% negative to 12% positive. You know, a very small handful of stories about, you know, what do Trump supporters in the country think about the new president. Those were positive stories. A couple of other small things. But in terms of this was hostile coverage about the travel ban, hostile coverage about the immigration, you know, hostile coverage about, you know, the various controversial statements that came out of the White House. They focused on, you know, what they would sort of trump up as scandals and controversies, ignored, you know, very mainstream things like trying to get more jobs, trying to fight terrorism. All, you know, the actual agenda of the new president was sort of pushed into the background so they could just attack and attack and attack on the issues they cared about. It matched perfectly what the Democrats in Congress were doing, and it just shows you how the establishment media goes hand in glove with the liberal Democratic establishment to sort of deliver a 1-2 punch to a president trying to shake things up.
Does the average consumer of the news care, or are you discouraged? Are we at the point where people are so balkanized in their political views and their moral views and their worldview that they don't care if the media is biased? Help me with that.
I think there's less and less of an impact to this. I mean, you know, I looked at the polls, you know, when President Trump was sworn in, he was at a pretty low rate for a new president in the sort of the low 40s. Then he had this onslaught of negative news. And at the end of that, he's still basically in the low 40s. You know, people who were supporting him were not moved by this frenzy of hostile coverage. I think all it did was hurt the media's reputation by showing that their partisanship was just so unhinged. I would take comfort in the fact that if you looked at the polls after the speech to Congress on Tuesday, people who watched it, this is a CNN poll, not a friendly poll, but a CNN poll, 70% of those who watched felt more positive about the president and his agenda. Well, that is an hour when the media filter was turned off and it was just the president talking directly to the people. I think if you can sort of engineer more situations like that, you might see a more common reaction. But in terms of the news coverage, it didn't really shake people off, but it, you know, it certainly helped keep people also from maybe looking at the president with new eyes.
Well, as we listen to the speech, for example, and you realize that 70% of the people actually gave a favorable review of it, but then you watch the news for the next 24 hours or, you know, 48 hours or whatever thereafter, and you see this onslaught of negativity. You got to believe that there's a self-fulfilling prophecy here, where if the media keeps browbeating any individual, that sooner or later the American people view that individual through a negative lens. Or do you think it's really water off the duck's back and the average person doesn't even listen?
Well, no, I mean, I think people listen. I think they interpret it knowing the media's bias and prejudice. But, you know, right now we're sort of at a phase where a lot of this is, you know, given all the tremendous coverage, nothing is really all that terribly important yet. You know, when we get to a point where something truly important is happening, you know, people are going to care, you know, they're going to want honest and solid news coverage, and they're going to be extremely frustrated if it just seems like more of this this theatrics that we've had for the last, you know, not just really the last month or so of the Trump administration, going back into the campaign. I think people sort of laugh about it when it's, you know, nothing all that important is happening. But, you know, another 9/11, another war, something truly important happening, an economic downturn. They're not going to want these kind of games either from the media or from politicians.
Give me 5 seconds. Who should we be listening to for accurate news?
Oh, I'd say listen to a diversity of sources. I mean, I think, you know, there's certainly a lot of conservative alternatives now that have grown up. Internet is a great place to find them.
Okay.
But look at the liberals, too, just to keep it honest.
Okay.
But everything with a grain of salt.
Thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch this afternoon, Stephen. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're going to take a commercial break right now. Coming up afterwards, we're going to talk with John Hayward of Breitbart News, and we're going to talk about the orchestrated attempts to undermine the president. Take a commercial break. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Very, very interesting. Oil's dropping. You know why? Based on inventory concerns. Come on. You know, first of all, anybody that reacted to the oil increase thinking that this was going to start to be the rebalancing in oil sector is out of their mind, because when you look around and you see the productivity levels continuing to grow week after week here in America, which is a good thing because it's putting people to work and I'm all for it, but we can't expect to see us have an immediate fix in the oil sector based on a week here or a week there of what would appear to be demand on inventories. The demand, any demand that we've seen on inventories, is not solid enough to continue and to be consistent through a very long period of time. This is why I have argued, and I've said many times, that the idea that rebalancing coming into the oil sector happening before the middle, at best, of fourth quarter this year is crazy. It just is not going to happen, and we're really not going to see it until we see solid industrial production pick up. It looks like stocks are going to take a little bit of a breather as everybody is watching things like Janet Yellen and what she might think. That is the headline. I don't believe that is the case. I don't think the markets really care much about that, but they are watching Eurozone inflation, productivity, retail sales, and a lot of other consumer confidence going on in the Eurozone.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is Dr. Everett Piper. That's DrEverettPiper. And if you want to call in this afternoon, I remind you that the call-in number is 866-372-7234. If you want to learn more about Oklahoma Wesleyan University, you can follow us online, obviously. Connect with us online. That's www.okwu.edu. In this segment, we want to talk about this ghostly figure that seems to be trying to control things behind the scenes right now. His name may be Barack Obama, for all we know. You know, even though Barack Obama no longer resides in the White House, it seems that former Obama administration confidants are trying to handicap President Donald Trump and his administration. With us now is John Hayward. He's the investigative reporter with Breitbart. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you here. Let me set you up a little bit with a couple bullets and questions. You've been covering a number of these fascinating stories, from attempts to come after President Trump's new advisor, Sebastian Gorka, to the recent attempts to discredit the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. And then obviously we had the Flynn resignation and the surveillance state coup nightmare, some people have called it. Are you finding covert activities, legitimate covert activities, or is this conspiracy theory out there with regard to what's going on in what seems to be a persistent strategic plan to undermine the new president?
Well, I think you've hit the right words there. It's persistent and it's strategic. And after what happened with Attorney General Jeff Sessions over the past couple of days, I think it's hard not to conclude it's an organized effort with a significant degree of coordination. It's probably not a lot of people. I think you can do all this leaking and all this media manipulation with a fairly small coterie of people that are still in positions of high power from the Obama administration, because they have so much access to the media. They have only to pick up the phone or write an email, and they can get a fairly significant amount of coverage rolling like an avalanche in a short period of time for these highly coordinated hits. If you look at the timeline of media coverage, the stories will start popping within minutes of each other when they couldn't possibly have seen each other because it was coordinated coverage. But I don't think it's a vast teeming conspiracy of thousands of people. I think it's a fairly small group of people in a high position left over from the Obama administration, working for the Obama administration's interests and working with people who are career bureaucrats that have more of a turf protecting interest, or they're ideologically opposed to what the Trump administration is doing, or they just plain don't like some of the individual people that work for it. Some of this is personal.
Now, you use the word coordinated. The word coordinated implies a coordinator, that there has to be somebody, a coach, a teacher, a leader, that's coordinating this activity. That would seem to be a major story for an investigative reporter to go after. Is there any evidence of this coordinator? And if so, who is it and what do we do about it?
Well, the evidence is circumstantial, but a lot of it does point at the former president, at Barack Obama. And I think that got much stronger over the last couple of days. That went from being a theory to having some real teeth behind it when we saw this report about how in his final days in office, the president had deliberately altered the rules to lower the classification threshold for material relating to the investigation of the Trump campaign and its alleged ties to the Russian government that's been going on. A very deliberate step was taken to make that information more widely available across the government, which means it's much easier to leak and it's much easier to generate stories on it. This was not part of a dedicated effort to fight some Russian hacking menace to the U.S. electoral system. That was completely ignored by the Obama administration until Donald Trump won the election, at which point they suddenly became very, very concerned about it and very obviously began laying these traps, these booby traps or legislative procedural executive bombs in the last few days they were in office. And I think at this point, it's very difficult to deny that the president, the former president himself, is aware of it and at some level was responsible for setting this up. The next step would be, is he actively coordinating it? And he does seem to be busy setting up his own little office in Washington, pulling a staff together. His top advisor, Valerie Jarrett, just moved into his house, which is rather odd. But there she is. It's a big house, plenty of room. So, you know, it's not like she's living in a guest room or anything. But still, that's a little bit on the weird side. So it does look like he intends to remain engaged. And we're hearing rumors that he's going to have a big splashy resurfacing sometime in the next month or two and come out as the leader of the opposition, which would just formalize what I think many people suspect he's already doing.
Does anybody in the mainstream media care? Or is this only an issue that those who, I'll call it conservative, those that lean conservative, care about and care to take the time to investigate? Do you know that the mainstream media will do its job, or are you just shaking your head and saying to yourself, this isn't going to happen?
I really don't trust them. I don't think the mainstream media as a group, and it's not homogenous, there may be a few dissenters here and there, but a lot of them either approve of this, they're participating in it, they're actively colluding with this shadow government idea. Look at some of the fake news stories. There have been dozens of them since Trump was brought in, since he won the election. Dozens of manifestly, obviously false news stories. And every last one of them, if you read them, will mention anonymous sources that just picked up the phone one day and called up these reporters. And a reporter knows who it is. You know, it's not a mysterious voice on the phone or a random email from a blocked address. The reporter knows who's feeding them the story. And these people can call up reporters at will and say, hey, I'm going to give you a hot tip about everybody in the State Department, all the managers are quitting because they can't stand Donald Trump. Well, it turns out that wasn't true, but it got saturation media coverage for about 24 hours. It wasn't remotely true. But I think a lot of these reporters are very deliberately, credibly relaying these reports without asking the questions they need to ask.
John, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch, and thank you for your good work and your persistence in trying to get us the truth in media.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to take another commercial break as we go into our last segment. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I do want your calls in the next segment. We're going to talk about education further and redefining reality.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Again, the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'm going to do a little monologue here, and then I'm going to encourage some Q&A. We can talk about any of the topics of the day, but I'm going to focus on education right now. Obviously, I'm a college president, and I care about good education, and I would argue that today's education, by and large, across the nation, is frankly terrible. You know, let's go back to this quote from Walter Williams in his article this past week titled, The Case for School Choice. Here's Walter Williams' quote. According to the nation's report card, only 37% of 12th graders were proficient in reading in 2015, and just 25% were proficient in math. For black students, achievement levels were a disgrace. Nationally, 17% of black students scored proficient in reading and 7% scored proficient in math. In some cities, such as Detroit, black academic performance is even worse. Among 8th graders, only 4% were proficient in math and only 7% in reading. Educators seem to think that this is the kind of achievement that they can congratulate themselves for. Walter Williams. Now, my response to this, as an educator, as a Christian college president, is this. Our track record is quantifiable, and through our broken public schools and the failed education paradigm of the NAE and their democratic dupes, we promote students from one grade level to the next, not because of any actual academic achievement, but rather simply because they quote-unquote participated. Then we give them a trophy, i.e. a high school diploma, that means virtually nothing. The result is a citizenry that can't read and can't write, a generation with no understanding of how to multiply or divide, and a workforce that doesn't have the skills to work, and an electorate that doesn't understand math and has no morality. We have a crippled nation as a result of this. Bad ideas lead to bad education, lead to bad consequences. And until we correct this educational cancer that plagues our country, we're going to be putting Band-Aids on cancer. And you don't cure it that way. I believe I have Shirley in Tennessee. Shirley, are you still with me? If so, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say how much I appreciate you having the lady on early. She's right on it. The watchmen on the wall aren't watching, and it's up to us as the people here listening to this show to go tell all of our families, friends, and get out there in the streets and tell them about Christ and bring them in. Secondly, I am an educator, and you're right. We already know there's a disparity in learning. We also know that the unions were so expensive that there's been a big fall off for a lot of educators because they can't afford the union. But it's because the union isn't about saving educators' jobs. It's really about putting money into abortion and homosexuality and all this other stuff. So a lot of educators won't join because of that. And then, and there's also, I've worked in schools that were wonderful and schools that were terrible, two of them that have been shut down. And the, one of the schools, they only had 16% who could do math and 5% who could do reading. And that was hundreds of kids, African American. And it's terrible. And that was a charter school, so I don't support them either. I support that we come together in either Christian school, right, homeschool, and if we can clean up that. And lastly, if you don't mind, not all the kids get diplomas. Some of them get a certificate of attendance because they have not passed anything, any of the tests to get a diploma. And Obama needs to be arrested because I feel like he's interfering with government affairs. And if we did that, we would be arrested. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Shirley. Appreciate your call. I think what Shirley's talking about right now is, again, it's very simple. Shirley is a committed educator. She's done a good job in the classroom. She's tried to educate her students to understand the subject matter that she brings to the table every day as she enters class. However, the unions care more about preserving the teacher's job and preserving their own flow of cash than they do about building character or teaching morality or even teaching mathematics to the students within these school systems. We know that. And no, I'm not criticizing teachers, and I'm not criticizing those who are committed to trying to correct this problem. What I am criticizing is an establishment that clearly doesn't care. You know, they say the definition of insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, we're not going to get any different results if we keep doubling down on terrible education in a paradigm that's been proven to be broken. We know that. I was debating in Tulsa, not that long ago, against a school board administrator and a Republican who was pro-Common Core. And I suggested to them that local control is always better than government control when it comes to education. They countered me and suggested this. They said, Dr. Piper, do you really believe that giving local control to little communities such as Hugo and Salisaw is the right solution? You could hear a gasp go through the room because this insult of these two elitists who suggested the poor souls at Hugo and Salisaw weren't smart enough to educate their own children. My response was simply this. I said, Mr. So-and-so, last I knew is that those moms and dads who take the time to homeschool or to even take their kids and help them through homework in Hugo and Salisaw are doing a heck of a lot better job of educating their kids than these poor souls that are subjected to your lousy education in the city of Tulsa. You could hear a gasp again go through the room because the evidence and the proof is pretty clear that the local control of the mom and dad who's doing his or her best in Hugo and Salisaw results in much better education than government-controlled schools that can't teach the kids to read and write and multiply and divide and clearly don't understand what the meaning of morality is. Pete in South Carolina, are you still with me? If so, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Dr. Piper, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your great work.
Thank you.
A few things. I make a timeline of American history. It's beautifully illustrated, patriotic, and factually accurate. And the American Family Association kindly did a story on it in their journal in October 2013. And, you know, I tell you, I go to a lot of schools, and, you know, people like Shirley are all around, but they are in the minority. And I'll tell you, it's so frustrating for me. You know, I have literally gone broke in my pursuit to help teach the story of this country. Literally gone broke. And, you know, it is disgraceful that our schools, they just will not teach. It's not just negligence and incompetence. It is that, but it is more. It is by design. And, you know, my opinion is that American history should be taught every single year for half the year. In the history time slot, half a year, every single year from kindergarten on, American history should be taught. And, you know, I also give a presentation called The Drums of Freedom, where I involve music with teaching American history. And I've memorized the Declaration of Independence. We started it out loud in full 1,200 times. And you know, when I go to schools and say, I give this presentation, you know, and I give a very basic elevator speech, I said, you know, I talk about God's reference, you know, four times in the Declaration. And at that point, forget it. You're not coming here.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, Pete, thanks for calling in, and thanks for the good work you do in trying to educate kids in terms of the seminal documents of our country and the founding principles that clearly you have the right, the legal right, to teach in any public school setting. One of the things I think we need to remember is that it's a lie that you can't enter into the classroom and speak about God, because if that were true, you couldn't even reference the Declaration of Independence, because the Declaration of Independence says that we are endowed by what? By who? Our Creator, with certain unalienable rights, and among those rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We are endowed by our Creator. We are endowed by our Creator. This is a reference to God, people. And if we can't reference the Declaration of Independence within a public school of the United States of America, then we're in trouble. The point is, you do have the legal right, and you need to push that and promote that and not be intimidated into silence, especially be intimidated by a lie. Colin in Nebraska, are you with me? Welcome to Washington Watch.
Mr. Piper, nice to talk to you, brother.
Likewise.
I don't even know how I want to formulate, except that a couple of years ago, I live in Lincoln, Nebraska, and my 13-year-old daughter at the time, the teacher prefaced the class. She introduced herself and then told the kids. The first thing she said to them, before she introduced the subject matter, she said, if there's anyone in here who has gender identity issues, please come to me and we can talk about it. Mm. Now, these are 12 and 13-year-old kids. And it's Lincoln, Nebraska. And I'm like, really? She comes home 3 months later. She has her long hair cut off, and she's got her popped up and wearing loose clothes. And they call me into school and ask me if it's all right. The teachers refer to her as a male, or with her name is Emily, and want to be called Emmett and be called that. And they had a counselor, a school social worker, everybody was sitting around. And I walked in, I said, what's this about? They said, well, we just want your approval to call her a male name. I said, you guys do whatever you want. I've been around. You know what? I was there when she was 2 minutes old holding her, so, you know, I know who she is. And she will eventually. So, you know, that's just one thing of many. It's just ludicrous. And to call it names like that is not very productive. But I like what you're doing, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, Colin. Thank you for calling in. Let me talk a little bit about this, because I think what Colin has hit on is one of the greatest fallacies in our educational establishment today. And that's the issue that our identity is nothing but the sum total of our inclinations. Or say it another word, our personhood is nothing other than what our proclivities are. And that we're governed by our appetites and our instincts. And that's the definition of who we are as human beings. I've said that before on this program. That is the ultimate insult to what it means to be a human being. You are the imago Dei. You're made in the image of God. You're not the imago dog. You don't have to follow your every instinct and appetite. The stamp of God on the human soul is the ability to think, to be rational, to argue, to debate, and to come to conclusions, and to be morally culpable as to what you do with those ideas. You don't have to do everything you're inclined to do. Every one of you listening right now is inclined to do something that you shouldn't do. Whether it be smoking, or drinking, or lying, or cheating, or speeding, or stealing, we're all inclined to do things that we know are wrong, and we choose not to do those things because we have moral culpability. Don't let anybody dumb down the definition of who you are to nothing but an inclination. That is an insult, and it's silly and crazy. Let's take, for example, the argument for women being bumped out of the locker room, out of the shower, out of the bathroom, if you will, and their sports and their privacy being taken away by who? A delusional male who raises his hand on a given day and says, I'm a female. Now, those of you who share a biblical worldview have the answer for this, and it's easy. It's easy. You're the feminist. You're the one who's pro-woman. It's the opposition that's the misogynist and anti-female, because they're saying that females are not biological facts. They're suggesting that a female is nothing other than a fantasy or a fabrication of a dysphoric male who's confused and thinks he's a woman. Now, what kind of insult is that to the female to say you don't exist? You're nothing but a make-believe fairy tale. You're a fabrication. You're a unicorn. You're a leprechaun. You don't exist. It's the conservative who's the true feminist today because you believe in females. You believe they exist. It's the liberal who is insulting the female. It's the progressive who says women don't even exist anymore. They're nothing but the imagination. Take the high road. Reclaim the definition of what it means to be male and female. Reclaim the definition of what it means to be a human being. You are the Imago Dei, the image of God. You are not the Imago Dog. You are a human being. You are not an animal. And as a human being, you have the highest standard within all of God's creation to be, that's why you are a human being, to be the image of God and to represent his moral standards, his intellect, his revelation, and his truth to the people around you and to a culture around you that desperately needs the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture. You know, I was reading recently in an article on the Gospel Coalition about the redefining of reality and the fact that objective facts don't even matter anymore, but rather subjective feelings. And this is a shift that's being made today in the issue of transgenderism in our schools. A prime example is in New York, where Governor Andrew Cuomo issued a letter this past year where he is telling people within the state of New York that gender identity is going to trump, if you will, sexual reality. And he says this, that a student's actual or perceived gender, their gender identity or expression, is the thing that's going to govern their rights and privileges within the state of New York. And he says, we do not and will not tolerate discrimination in the state of New York. So what he's saying is we won't discriminate between the male and the female any longer. And if you're not going to discriminate between the male and the female, then male doesn't exist and female doesn't exist. And if you're not going to have discriminating, when you discriminate, let me say it this way. The word discriminate is not a bad word if used properly. I have discriminating tastes, if you will. I, for example, may like a prime rib more than a hamburger. I'm discriminating in my selection of one versus the other because I have the ability to see the difference and that one might be better, might be more tasty than the other. So when you say that as a human being you're not going to discriminate in any capacity ever again, then you have no ability to make judgments between right and wrong, good and evil, light and darkness, or bitter and sweet. Doesn't that sound like the prophet of Isaiah? You've given up the ability to call a spade and to call truth what it really is. This is metaphysical subjectivism that's dominating our conversation today rather than the revelation of God, which is objective and real and true, which is what I teach at this university. We don't dumb down the definition of the human being. We elevate it to the Imago Dei, and we believe in the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon on Washington Watch. Thank you for allowing me to join you this afternoon. I wish you the best for the weekend. God's blessing on you.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.